Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Matt Bartkowski, and I represent Robert Scott McKinley and Deborah McKinley in this case. It involved a motor vehicle accident occurred on October 3rd of 2009. This case was tried in the Superior Court in August of last year. There was a defense verdict on liability in the case. This is the appeal, the appellant's appeal, on the trial court's rulings, the pretrial rulings, as well as the rulings of the trial judge during the course of the trial as well, too. The first issue I'd like to address is the trial judge's granting of a motion for a protective order of the defendant's medical records that took place. This accident occurred at the base of the Summit Bridge on Summit Bridge Road. At the time of the accident, there was construction that was going on. The construction forced vehicles into one lane going over to the bridge. At the time of the accident, it was dark. It was foggy. This is in a rural, wooded area, so there's really no houses on either side of the road. The accident occurred when the defendant slammed on her brakes. My client was riding a motorcycle behind her, and he struck the back of her vehicle. After the accident occurred...
Now, who in the record said that she slammed on her brakes?
It was the police officer, Trooper Downer. I'm sorry, at one point had said she abruptly stopped, and he said basically slammed on her brakes was okay. His other.
But that was the police from the police officer's testimony.
Correct.
Distinguished from the defendant or the eyewitnesses.
Well, that's what the defendant had told the police officer when she spoke to the police officer.
That's what he said. She told him she denied it.
Correct. That's correct.
Okay. Thanks.
She had told the police officer that she had a fear of bridges for which she takes prescription medication. She said that she approached the bridge. She started to panic.
Did she deny that as well, saying that?
She said that she had a fear of bridges. She admitted that. She denied that she takes prescription medication. She also denied that she told the police officer that she takes prescription medications. She indicated that she started to feel nervous as she approached the construction. She didn't say the word panic, which was important in this case. Her level of anxiety was something that was very important. She told the police officer she had an anxiety attack, and again that she slammed on her brakes.
Just so we can keep things straight, we all know what the ruling was, and okay. I don't want to totally disrupt your chronology. Was the officer allowed to testify that she said she slammed on her brakes?
Yes.
And he was allowed to say that she said she had an anxiety attack?
Yes, that's correct.
He just was not allowed to say she told him she was taking medication?
Correct. That she takes prescription medication for her fear of bridges. Okay. That's what he was not permitted to testify to.
What would that have added to the mix? I mean, you've got, if the jury accepts that testimony is true, you've got the fact that she has anxiety attacks about bridges and slammed on her brakes as a result of that. Is it your position that if she had taken her medication, she wouldn't have had the anxiety attack?
There's two reasons that would have been important for the jury to hear that. Number one is the two issues were the credibility of the police officer versus the defendant, and the second issue was the extent of the defendant's anxiety at the time of the accident.
Right. And the way I read your brief, that's also compounded by the fact that the bystander statements to the emergency responder were admitted into evidence, and the bystander said she was going slow and the motorcycle was following slowly behind her.
Correct. That's correct. So I think that compounds that as well, too.
Well, the ruling was that any evidence of the medical records had to be kept out because it was privileged, correct?
Correct.
And your position is that was error because she put into issue.
Correct.
Her own medical condition.
Correct.
The response by the other side is she didn't. Mm-hmm. She never formally put into issue in the lawsuit her medical condition. it came into the case only because she responded to questions by the policeman, which she presumably was required to do since he was an investigating officer. So isn't the question that we have whether or not this her medical condition was put into issue for purposes of waiving the privilege?
I agree, Your Honor. And I think that she did, and she did immediately when she told the police officer that she takes prescription medications. This was a, I'll call it a strange accident that occurred.
Well, let's stop there for a minute, because it's one thing for her lawyer to formally put that matter, that subject into issue, either in a pleading or in some other formal way. And something quite different, for that matter, to become, to be, quote, put in issue because, she responded as she had to a question that was asked during a post-accident investigation before there was any lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the law?
Well, and I think there, as far as I could find, I didn't find any law in that particular area. In Delaware, the law in the doctor patient privilege as it relates to a civil case is very slim. There's been cases regarding the criminal aspect of it, but we weren't able to determine very much in terms of the civil.
Well, don't we have to hold, as a matter of Delaware law, perhaps as a matter of first impression, if there's no authority, that whatever defendant or witness says to the police officer is automatically in issue, or automatically put in issue.
I agree.
Simply because it was uttered to the policeman and later became the subject of the suit.
Correct. And that was her defense to the police officer to explain why she acted in the way she did at the time of the accident. He was investigating this to find out not only the cause, but also potential criminal.
Okay. Well, is there any authority from any other jurisdiction that addresses this question?
I was not able to locate anything, Your Honor, from other jurisdictions that would address similar circumstances. I think there were cases that suggested, well, the mere filing of a lawsuit and having to defend a lawsuit was not enough to break that doctor-patient privilege. But I was not able to find anything, given this or a similar even fact pattern in this case, that would address that.
We have a case involving the attorney-client privilege. And in that particular case, the verdict exceeded the policy limits. There was a subsequent lawsuit for not settling in good faith within the policy limits. And when the insurance adjuster was questioned about why didn't you offer the policy limits, the answer was because of advice of counsel. We held that you waive the privilege when your explanation or your defense was the advice of counsel. Is there any analogy here to what happened?
I don't think there is, only because of the only Ms. Cashin basically just spoke to the police officer. I don't think there was any consultation with anyone else that would have given rise to her breaking that doctor-patient privilege.
Why doesn't 503D3 basically preclude your argument? Because doesn't that say that there's a waiver of the privilege only where the patient asserts her condition in a proceeding? And there was no proceeding when she made that statement.
Well, but I think it was in anticipation of, even though she didn't mean to at the time, but that was, like I said, there was either a potential criminal investigation of the police officer plus a potential civil case. So when she made that statement, there was the potential that she was going to face criminal charges.
But
or
that's
potential.
Not what the rule says, does it? I mean, it talks about asserting her condition in a proceeding. Doesn't that mean in a legal action?
Well, I don't think that she can then go back and say, well, gee, I didn't say that within the context of a legal proceeding. If she came back and her answer to the suit in this case changes her story and says, well, wait a minute now, I'm not saying I don't agree that I told that to the police officer. I'm saying something different now in my strategy now.
No, that's a separate issue, what she said, as opposed to getting into the doctor's medical files, isn't it?
I disagree. I think that's where she put her medical condition into issue. Her medical condition, she relied upon that.
Well, how do you square that with the language of the rule? The rule requires a proceeding. There was no proceeding at the time that she supposedly told the police officer that she was taking medication.
Right. I don't believe that for her to be able to put it in the context of saying later on down the line during the course of the proceedings after suit had been filed, for her to make that statement, so I don't know what the difference is than the fact that she made those statements to the police officer.
The difference is there was no lawsuit at the time, and all we know is that the policeman said she made that statement to him, but she denies it and is willing to put her credibility on the line, presumably under oath.
Well, and I think, given that circumstances, I think that she put her credibility on the line, but by denying that statement, then that gives a further reason why we should be able to get those medical records.
That's a circular argument, though, isn't it?
I think it is to an extent, but once she makes that denial...
The rule not only doesn't support your argument, it seems to cut against it. So if we're going to find... If we're going to accept your argument, there's got to be some legal basis that either is of equal legal stature with the rule or trumps it. What is it? And it's got to be more than I believe that.
Yeah, and I think the problem here is, like I said, that we couldn't find any law within this, and I think this is a first impression of whether that, in fact, there's a requirement that it's in the proceeding or what context that someone were to make that assertion.
Well, it's a matter that's never been addressed, is it? Doesn't Carrion versus the City of New York provide that a party does not waive the doctor-patient privilege merely by being forced to defend an action where his or her physical condition is in controversy? Rather, to effect a waiver, the party must affirmatively assert the condition, either by way of counterclaim or to excuse the conduct complained of by the plaintiff.
And I agree with that, but I think it goes back to that the defendant's prior statements that she made to the police officer about by putting her medical condition into issue. The fact that she came back later on and said, well, I'm going to defend this action with a totally different strategy and say, well, gee, I'm not.
Okay, help me just understand your position.
Sure.
Let's assume proceeding means the litigation. In other words, after the complaint has been filed. Did the defendant assert her medical condition in the proceeding at all?
I would say that she did by denying the statements that she made to the police officer, by denying that she takes prescription medication for her fear of bridges and denying that she told the police officer.
So she's in a no-win position.
Well, I think if she makes the statements to a police...
But we don't know whether she made the statement. All we know is that the policeman said that she did. She denies that she did. Your take on that is that she decided to change her strategy and to go with a different strategy. That may be one inference, but the other inference is that she was telling the truth all the while and the police officer either misunderstood what he heard her say or falsified, what she supposedly said. We don't know what the fact is.
Right, but I think that the problem that we had as the plaintiffs in the case was we don't know which version of that is correct. We have a police officer saying this is what she told me, and is what he testified under oath. She's saying, no, I never said that. No, I don't even take the medication. It's certainly reasonable for the plaintiffs. And the only records that we obtained were just those records of the neurologist that she testified that she received anti-anxiety medication from. She denied that she took him as a result of the accident. But those are the only records we obtained. Certainly those records would tell, was she telling the truth when she...
The whole point of a privilege is that the party that is protected by it can you know, refused to produce relevant information. All you're telling us is that the information might be relevant. We understand that. But it doesn't help us decide whether the privilege has been waived.
And again, I think it goes back to the fact that my argument is that in terms of the proceeding, during her deposition, when she in the proceeding said, no, I don't, that's not correct.
You're into your rebuttal time. Is there anything else you'd like to bring up, or would you like to just reserve your time?
I'd like to reserve the time, please.
May I please the court? I'm Beth Christman, and I represented the defendant in this matter. I'm prepared to discuss the various issues in this case. However, if your honors have any particular area to which you would ask me to direct my comments initially, I'm happy to do that.
Let's start with the issue that we've been having the colloquy on.
It's the defendant's position that she never put her medical condition at issue in this case. When, for example, a person is diabetic and that person says, this accident wasn't my fault because I followed my doctor's orders, but I went into a diabetic coma while I was driving and caused an accident, so I shouldn't be held responsible, then that person has put that condition at issue and it's relevant to get the records.
In the proceeding, right?
In the proceeding, yes, Your Honor. Here, she never said that her medical condition should excuse her conduct. She never did anything that would waive the privilege.
What did the police officer say that she said?
He said that he was concerned about potential being under the influence, so he asked her questions about whether she was taking any medication or whether she had any alcohol. He says she told him she took medication. She says she didn't tell him that.
All right, well, let's just stop right there. Put aside getting the doctor's records. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, the court ruled he could not say, she said, I took medication.
Correct.
So aren't they two separate issues?
They are two separate issues. The second issue has to do with whether that's relevant to this case and whether she was liable for this accident, and the judge ruled that it was unfairly prejudicial to get into that when she hadn't put her medical condition at issue in this case.
Well, didn't the judge, with regard to the statement by the police officer, simply say it's easier to exclude it?
She may have said that. I don't remember her exact comments, Your Honor.
But that's not a rule of evidence.
No, I agree, Your Honor, that is not a rule of evidence.
What's the rule of evidence that would allow the exclusion of a statement made to an investigating police officer at the scene of the accident explaining why what was happening?
The rule of evidence would be that it is unfairly prejudicial and its probative value is outweighed by the prejudice towards the defendant in this case. And that would be the rule on which we would.
Is there any case you can cite where someone's investigating an accident and the officer says the response was, I am taking medication, and that would not be admissible?
I did not find any case that said that, no, Your Honor.
And generally, since that would be a statement by a party, wouldn't we think that it would be admissible?
If it is not unfairly prejudicial, and there was also an issue of whether it was relevant, because the concern was that the plaintiff had no expert to indicate that there was any reason why she should be taking medication to drive over a bridge. There was no indication that any doctor said she had to take medication to drive over a bridge, and therefore it would cause the jury to speculate about her condition improperly and unfairly in terms of what she was doing on that night. She admitted she was anxious. She admitted she was upset. She admitted to all the things she did that night. The medication issue was not something that was going to make any difference or be relevant to assisting the jury in determining whether she had an anxiety attack and
did
stopped
she
that night.
Did she admit taking or not taking?
She said she was not taking any medication to drive over the bridge.
So the policeman said, have you consumed any alcohol or are you taking any medication?
Correct.
And her answer was, I have not consumed alcohol and I have not taken any medication.
He said she told him she took medication for driving over bridges. She says she told him she did not do that.
Well,
so did he follow up and say, did you take medication today? Are you under the influence of medication?
He made the determination that she was not under the influence that day. It's hard to know. As I indicated in the brief, he did a very sketchy evaluation, which is one of the reasons we've been having so many problems with this case, because he didn't find the witnesses or anything else. We don't know all the questions he asked of her because we did not get into that during his testimony.
Did the jury hear that she was talking on the cell phone with her former husband as she approached the bridge?
It did.
And did they hear that the purpose of the call was for him to increase her comfort level before she crossed the bridge?
It did.
So we don't see any balancing in the record. The reason I wanted to separate the doctor-patient records from this statement is she could deny the office saying that to the officer. But tell me the rule of law, the rule of evidence, a case that says he should not have been allowed to say, she said, I was taking medication.
It was just the rule of evidence about the fact that it's not relevant and it's unfairly prejudicial and the probative value would not assist the jury. Whether she was taking medication or not that night gets into a whole different issue of something that she never put into issue in this case.
Well, let me follow up
yes,
on that,
Your Honor.
Because the medical records themselves would be the subject of a doctor-patient privilege, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
We're not talking about those. We're talking about the statement that she is claimed to have made to the police officer. I gather from your answers to Justice Hong's questions that whatever she told the police officer would not be the subject of the doctor-patient privilege.
No, it
may
would
be
not,
excludable under 403.
Correct, Your Honor.
But not on the basis of privilege.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so as to that statement, whether or not she put her medical condition at issue is itself not an issue. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
The correct analysis would be under Section 403.
Correct.
Or Rule 403.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there a ruling, was the ruling of the Superior Court done pursuant to Rule 403?
As I try to go back through, and I would have to read exactly what was said, this was done orally and not in writing. My recollection was that the judge simply made a ruling without giving a lot of explanation as to why she made the ruling.
Right. Well, we all know that a lot of medicines, prescription and otherwise, have these instructions that say, don't drive, don't operate heavy equipment, don't do something else. And if you admit, we'll assume there's an admission that I took medication, the natural follow-up would be, what medication did you take? Why were you taking it? When did you take it? If you're involved in an accident, and let's suppose hypothetically you were taking one of those innocuous medications for allergies or something else that said, don't drive, don't operate heavy equipment, why wouldn't that be relevant?
I think, Your Honor, the problem we have in this case is the plaintiff's trying to use it for the opposite reason. This isn't a case where the plaintiff is trying to say she was under the influence because she didn't know she was going to go over a bridge that night and she hadn't taken any medication to go over the bridge. What the plaintiff is trying to say is that she should have taken medicine to drive over the bridge, which might have made her under the influence, I suppose. But so they're going at it backwards to what the police officer is saying. So the police officer was looking at whether she was under the influence. It could cause the jury to speculate that she had been under the influence that night, when there was absolutely no evidence that she was under the influence that night. And that was a main concern that I had, and another reason why under 403 I felt it should be excluded.
Let me just follow up on something that you said earlier in response to a question by Justice Holland, and that is, if I heard it correctly, that the investigating officer concluded after whatever series of questions he asked about medication, that medication had no effect or impact in terms of causing the accident. Is that correct?
He determined that she was not under the influence, correct?
Was that the subject of trial testimony?
No, because it didn't come out that he tested her to see if she
was.
Well,
how do we know that he determined that?
He said that in his deposition testimony.
All right, which was introduced into the record.
Yes.
Okay, so is it for that reason that you're arguing under Rule 403A that it's not relevant at all?
Correct.
And because even the police officer concluded that it was, that line of questioning went nowhere. But
correct.
B, whatever relevance it may have would be outweighed by the prejudice that it would cause, because the jury would then have to speculate on whether perhaps and to what extent medication played a role.
That is correct, Your Honor.
But we don't have a ruling from the trial judge.
No, we don't, Your Honor. My client's position would be that it's harmless error under the circumstances that we don't have that ruling because it's not relevant information. And what the plaintiff, I think, is trying to prove is that she wasn't under the influence of medication and wants the jury to believe she should have been under the influence of medication as she went over the bridge.
Well, as I read the plaintiff's brief, it is that there was a dispute about whether she slammed on her brakes and that to the extent she had anxiety about bridges, this wasn't casual anxiety. It was the type of anxiety where she sought treatment to deal with it, and that if the anxiety was at that level where she sought treatment and received medication, perhaps she did slam on her brakes. So the plaintiff wants to use it for a credibility determination, putting aside anything to do with her doctor-patient privilege.
And Your Honor, that would then, however, go into the doctor-patient privilege, and she never testified that she went and saw a psychologist or a psychiatrist for anxiety. She testified that she saw a neurologist for her epilepsy and that anxiety was a side effect of that. And so that's what came out in her deposition. I struggled with whether to object to all the questions because we don't waive objections in a deposition of that nature, but I allowed a certain amount, and then I stopped and said there was a doctor-patient privilege, and was also concerned that the plaintiff, instead of filing a motion with the court to say that the privilege should be pierced, essentially, and he should be able to get the records, simply subpoenaed them and obtained them before the defense had an opportunity to file a motion to quash or respond to the attempts to pierce that doctor-patient privilege. And so that was also a concern in this case. Given all of the things that the police officer said and did that were contradicted by other things in the record, I think this issue was not as major an issue as the plaintiff wants it to be in terms of the totality of how the case was presented to the jury on that day.
Well, and the plaintiff makes the opposite argument, and the plaintiff says to the extent that the officer's credibility was put in issue, this was particularly important because it was something that would be verifiable.
Without getting into the doctor-patient privilege, the only way it's verifiable then is if the plaintiff pierces the doctor-patient privilege and gets those records. So the issue then becomes we're going to trial. The jury hears that she might have been under the influence. There were medical records improperly obtained.
Okay,
which
you're way ahead of my concern. My concern is if someone says, yes, I took medication. I took X medication 1 hour ago, and I took X many pills. That has nothing to do with doctor-patient confidentiality at all. and then the plaintiff can say, oh, well, you know, I got that, and it says you should only take one pill, and it says you shouldn't drive for so many hours after taking the pill, whatever. None of that has to do with doctor-patient privilege. And yet, as I understand the Superior Court's ruling, that entire line of inquiry was foreclosed because there was a separate ruling, you don't get any records from the doctor. And that's why we started with your presentation today when I said they're really two separate issues.
They are, Your Honor. However, if she had ruled that they could get into the question of medication used by my client, and really what it was not whether she used medication, but whether she didn't use medication, because there was no evidence she did.
Well, the two separate issues that Justice Holland referred to, as I understand it, are that with respect to the medical records themselves, totally apart from whatever the defendant told the police officer, that's an issue of privilege.
Correct.
And the deep issue in that context is whether or not her medical condition was put into issue in the proceeding or in the litigation. That's one issue.
Right.
As for what she told the police officer during the course of the investigation, that is not the subject of a privilege objection. That's a 403 objection, and the analysis is entirely different. Is that
is correct, Your Honor. And I guess what I was getting at was it is highly prejudicial to ask somebody about medication use without any evidence that medication use created the problem, created the accident on that night. And it would cause the jury to speculate that she was under the influence that night improperly, which
excluded. Give me an example of how you know the accident was caused by medication before you ever ask a question about medication. How does that unfold?
I can't give an example of that. I think what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that if the police officer had determined she was under the influence, then it would be appropriate to ask those questions. But the simple fact that he asked the question and he said she answered it in a particular way, without any evidence that she truly was under the influence or that that had any role in causing this accident, under Rule 403 would be very unfairly prejudicial to my client. There's no way for my client to defend against that other than, and she could say, I didn't say that, but a police officer saying something like that is very prejudicial in front of a jury.
I understand that. And, you know, we have briefs in other cases this week. They're telling us that if something is relevant and admissible, it frequently is prejudicial to the side that doesn't want it admitted. I'm just having trouble formulating a rule of law where if a police officer attributes a statement to a party, it doesn't come in. Up until today, I was under the impression the law was if a party made a statement to a police officer, it would come into evidence, absent privilege or something else, and then the party would have an opportunity to explain it, or the party would have an opportunity to challenge the officer's credibility. So that's why I'm looking for a rule of law that says this is just simply inadmissible.
Your Honor, I agree with everything Your Honor is saying. What I'm saying is that there are statements that a police officer could attribute to a person that would be so wholly prejudicial under Rule 403 that they should not be presented to the jury. You know, if the person blurted out, I'm a sex offender, to the police officer, even though it had nothing to do with the accident, that might be very prejudicial, and that would not be a question that would be properly asked in a case such as this. So, yes, all relevant statements, anything that is not protected by some other rule should go out, but my position is this should be protected under Rule 403.
So you're saying that the officer's question, were you using any medication, was an irrelevant question for him to ask. He comes to an accident scene, and he you know, if he would have said at the accident scene, are you a sex offender? We might have a debate about why you would ask that question. Mm-hmm. But you're equating asking about taking medication with an affirmative answer to asking a question about being a sex offender. So
well,
tell
Honor,
me why
let me
taking
try
and, medication is totally irrelevant to an accident scene.
Let me try it a different way. For example, if the officer asked appropriate questions, he was trying to decide if she was under the influence. Let's say he asked the questions, he found out that she did have something alcoholic to drink, he breathalyzed her, and she went, and he charged her with driving under the influence, and she went to court, defended it, and it was dismissed. The questions would have been relevant, everything he did would have been relevant, but the court would not have allowed that to come in because of the fact that it had been proven to be untrue and that it was not something that was relevant to the outcome of the case. That would be the way.
I don't understand that argument. The fact that a charge is dismissed doesn't preclude in a civil case evidence of driving under the influence.
Usually the fact that the ticket was given and all of that would not go in, and most judges I've seen have precluded it.
The fact that the ticket was given. But evidence of driving under the influence would still be admissible, wouldn't it?
Some evidence might have, and others might not. I've had trial judges rule differently on that.
But, all right.
Okay. Thank
We've
you,
used up all your time.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, one of the things that I had proposed in my motion at the pretrial conference was also that the trial judge could view in camera these records to see if they were accurate or not, to see if they would have confirmed what the defendant had said and also or what the police officer had said. The plaintiff wouldn't have an opportunity to look at any of the medical records, merely would have been the judge to take a look at that and see if that was correct. That would have been an alternative to make a determination as to whether or not those records would have supported what the police officer said or what the defendant had said as well.
But that
too
goes to relevance, not waiver of privilege.
Correct. Correct.
So at her deposition, did you say what medication did you take? When were you taking it?
Yes, I did.
And what were her answers?
She had indicated that she was taking, that she has seizures, and that she was taking Keppra, I believe was the medication that she had taken on that particular day, if my recollection is correct.
So she said that at her deposition, but did the jury hear that?
No. No. The jury was not allowed to hear any evidence of medication used by the defendant whatsoever. They didn't hear anything.
And so we don't know if there are any restrictions on the package for that medication because the whole inquiry was foreclosed.
Correct. The only thing that the defendant said at her deposition that the Keppra, the medication for her seizures, did cause some anxiety, and it wasn't real clear, but it wasn't clear if she indicated that the anti-anxiety medication she was taking was to help with that issue, but later on she had testified that she only takes the anti-anxiety medication for going on airplanes or sometimes when she's sleeping.
So she never, at her deposition, said she took any anti-anxiety medicine the day of the accident?
No.
Only the medicine for seizures?
Correct. She denied taking any anti-anxiety medication on the day of the accident as well. That's all I have, unless Your Honor have any additional.
Well, the other side asserted harmless error. Why isn't it harmless?
Well, it is because the jury, like I said before, the two biggest issues in this case were credibility of the police officer and the credibility of the defendant, as well as the level of anxiety that the defendant had at the time of the accident. If the jury never heard anything about a statement that the police officer made about taking prescription medication for her fear of bridges, the jury had no idea that the defendant's anxiety level was such that at least she was prescribed medication for her fear of bridges. That was important, giving her testimony at trial as well as in her depositions, that her anxiety level was, she was nervous.
So So independent of the medical records, you wanted to show she had anxiety when driving over bridges, that medication had been prescribed for that specific purpose, and she was not taking it that day.
I think it, the other issue is it shows that her anxiety level was more significant than what she had testified to. It also would have confirmed or bolstered the police officer's testimony when he said that she told him that she had an anxiety attack, which she denied. Certainly if the jury heard that the defendant took prescription medication for her fear of bridges, it would at least make it more easier in their minds to say, well, wait a minute, she may have had an anxiety attack and that may have caused her to act this particular way on the day of the accident, versus just I'm nervous and I'm slowing my vehicle down, and that's when this accident occurred.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Court will take this matter under advisement. We'll also take a recess.